But suspending the campaign does not mean suspending citizenship. I have to thank the voters of South Carolina, and I have to apologize to them. We will have broken their tradition of always picking the nominee. This will make me feel slightly guilty every time we go through South Carolina.
All right, South Carolina was absolutely Newt Gingrich's moment. Who can forget the way he took apart John King of CNN when he took the stage for the debate on a day where his wife had, his ex-wife, was all over the news in every nook and cranny talking about the fact that she said he wanted her to have, remember this, a three-way with his now current wife. So it was one of those woo moments that actually elevated Newt Gingrich when he said he was sick of the innuendo and the nonsense and all the other stuff along the way. My name's Kate Delaney. This show is America Tonight. Gingrich just officially quits his presidential run on Wednesday, but man, did he leave a trail of tears in the form of money behind him. They say it's close to, for example, an unpaid bill, $4.3 million at the end of March, because you've got private jet flights, other services, all kinds of things that happen along the campaign. You know, money, that's what you do. You file with the Federal Election Commission, the money that you blow through. The campaign says it's paid off $500,000 of the total, which still leaves $3.8 million. So there are vendors who are waiting in line with their hands out to be reimbursed for whatever it is, television advertising, you know, any of that kind of stuff that you use when you're making a big run. And before going into debt, the campaign spent on family businesses, and they had all kinds of things that were being run up in that direction. So that means Newt's probably going to have another book come out, or he could be speaking soon at a town hall meeting near you or some other meeting, because remember, he gets $30,000 or something it is for speech, so that could certainly tick off some of that debt. This is what happens when you stay in for a long time. I mean, it was a huge win in South Carolina, that primary win, but he seemed to be initially the most viable Republican alternative to Romney, but then that guy became Rick Santorum. They're out of the way, and some are saying, so what's up with Ron Paul? He's like the forgotten man. He's been on those stages for all of those 20-some debates, and here's the thing. He's not completely forgotten. His name is being floated at a Libertarian convention. They're taking votes on who they'd like to see. So Ron Paul, and potentially on a ticket, Ron Paul and Gary Johnson, the former New Mexico governor, who's wildly popular in a lot of circles. He fits in with Ron Paul's philosophy. And, you know, you think back to the 90s and Ross Perot, who says somebody else couldn't rattle some cages and get a chunk of the vote? I'm sure Republicans would be furious over that. You think of electorally how many electoral votes it will take for Romney, and I'm thinking 270, 290. I'm really thinking on the high side, probably 290. So how many votes would be taken away? But what kind of chance would you give Ron Paul and Gary Johnson? See, it's all about money. And who has the most money is the person who can afford to pump out the most campaign ads and get people to go out and vote. Honestly, I think Ron Paul could probably rally up a lot of the youth vote. I think he could scrape together, you'd be surprised, more younger people, maybe I say this after seeing this, than Barack Obama. Call me crazy, I know. Hope and change you can count on. That was the first time around. Part two, not so much. But I saw some really upset kids, voting age, barely voting age, who were out supporting Ron Paul with signs, handing things out in New Hampshire and other spots. And I think there could be such a big push for Ron Paul that you might be surprised at the amount of people that could vote for that ticket. And Gary Johnson, and the reason I float the name at the top is I read a column about it, and the Cato Institute was flushing out some possibilities. Plus, the Libertarian Convention is going on, and the 5th is when they take their vote. Speaking of voting, you know, I am the poll princess here on the show. I love polls. And I happened to come across an odd poll that was linked on Drudge and a few other sites that I was going through earlier today. And this poll says, I don't know why I should be surprised by this, but this poll that I read showed that 1 in 7 think that the world is coming to an end. Yep. 15% of the people worldwide believe that the world will end during their lifetime, and 10 think the Mayan calendar will signify it in 2012. The Mayan calendar spans about 5,125 years, as all of you know, and that was thought to be D-Day, when the world is done. But 1 in 10 thinking that we're going to see the end of the world? I think that's, does that seem high to anyone else out there? Of course, these are how many people responding in more than 20 countries. Ipsos questioned people in China and Turkey and Russia, Mexico and South Korea, Japan, the United States, Argentina, Hungary, Poland, Sweden, France, Spain, Belgium, Canada, Australia, Italy, South Africa, Great Britain, Indonesia, Germany, just so you know. And those people, the majority of those people, the number that I just gave you, feel as though, yep, the world could end in my lifetime. I'm thinking that that's a serious possibility. So I'm hoping not. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm not really ready to go at this point. And it's a freak thing because we don't like to talk about death in this country, right? But you got a lot of people in this country and in all those other countries I mentioned that really do believe, yep, at some point the earth is going to swallow us up. We're going to have an apocalypse and that's it. We are done. We're done. And mostly in the poll, they found that people with lower education or household income levels under 35 years old were more likely to believe that, and they already have anxiety over the prospect. They're concerned about the future. They're not saying, oh, Armageddon, okay, sure, I'll weigh in on this. No, they're really bothered. They're having anxious moments, and they're taking Klonopin and other drugs to quell their fears. Ooh, that's scary, right? If there's something about living in the moment, and not the whole thing about today being present, that whole idea. I guess they're not being present. All right, coming up on the flip side, we're going to take in a couple of different directions. So you want to hang with us. You can call the show by hitting press 4, keyword America, tonight call, or 855-266-KATE.
Summer specials are on at HHA, Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big at herbalhealer.com. And new customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's summer specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Liquid CalMag vitamin D and organic iodine, CoQ10 with Hawthorne, Colon Enhancer, Super 2, Natural Laxative, our exceptional product Tonixin, Memory Power, and Super Male and Femplex, all on sale for summer at herbalhealer.com. Also get 10% off on the Herbal Healer Academy Survival Course, information that might save your life. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at herbalhealer.com.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds, It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain, not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkydd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed or your money back.
Kate Delaney, America Tonight, with a big fat reminder about the contest we have coming up on our next show. It is the Kentucky Derby. We've pulled it together, man. We have the post positions for the horses, and here's the deal. Win, place, and show. So that's what we're looking for. You don't have to know anything about horse racing. It's just about the numbers, and they could be in any order you want. 2, 4, 6, whatever it is, or 1, 2, 3, doesn't matter. Happens in our third hour of our next show, giving away great prizes for this one. Oh, man, I hope someone wins. I'm not even going to tell you about the prizes until our next show. You definitely have bragging rights, but you're going to have some pretty cool things as a result if somebody is able to actually nail the Kentucky Derby. Rick in Illinois twisted my arm, and so I decided that we were going to do it. I think, in fact, we probably have horses in the barn somewhere. How does that horse sound? When I was a kid, I could do it, that neighing sound, or I don't know. I'm not good at that. I was better at the chickens than the other sounds. You know that old story that they used to tell you when you were a kid, and you had one of those big round things, and they'd point to it, and then the sound would come out. Never mind. Another non sequitur. So we're talking about the world ending and the fact that there are people that truly believe that the world is going to end in their lifetime. If it doesn't happen in 2012, it'll happen at some point, and particularly people 35 and under, they see some of the things that are happening with the Eurozone, what's going on with debt, what's going on with people being disillusioned, you know, a myriad of other things, and really think that something horrific is going to happen, that it's going to be Armageddon. I, for one, am hoping that that is not the case, as I really like the idea of having some more life, frankly, and not being foisted into the middle of that. Can you imagine? We've seen it played out on the big screen, and we've read about plagues and other things, obviously, through a whole bunch of different books, including the Bible, many people reading the stories there and looking for predictions and whatnot, and the Mayan calendar is another reason why so many people believe that it's the end of it, and then that's what's going to happen. Unfortunately for Junior Seau, who is such just a force of life in a sense, it's a tragedy. that this former NFL great was found dead in his home on Wednesday outside of San Diego from what, by all accounts, looks to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Here is the chief from that area, Frank McCoy, talking about it.
She indicated that she returned to the residence to find Mr. Sayal unconscious, suffering from a gunshot wound to the chest. This case, at this point, is being investigated as a suicide. A handgun was found near the body.
So I heard him talk about the gun. No suicide note. They didn't immediately know who the gun was registered to. They think it was a suicide because there was no foul play. His mother was there. This is the sad part. Imagine being a mother and walking in and seeing that, just sobbing uncontrollably, you know, not understanding, being completely shocked. And as we've heard so many times in these cases, she says that her son didn't indicate there was a problem when she was talking to him by phone earlier in the week, that he was joking around and acting normal. He had sent some text messages that said he loved his ex-wife and three kids, sent them those kind of messages, and that was it. It's very, very, very sad and hard to make sense of. Here's Dante Stallworth, who was a good friend of Junior Sayles, and this was his reaction.
I was devastated. I couldn't believe it because, you know, you always looked at Junior as a very happy person. He was always making people laugh all the time, and that was just something that Junior will always be remembered by.
Yeah, he was that jokey kind of person, and the Chargers family, because he played for the Chargers for so long, were just stunned when they found out, because he was very big in San Diego, even afterwards, and took part in a lot of community things, did a lot of things to help people. He was out there signing autographs whenever he could to help out. He was a 10-time All-Pro linebacker, and for most of his 20-year career, it was spent with the Chargers. But in retirement, he had taken a turn in a bad direction. At one point, he drove his Cadillac off a 30-foot bluff in Carlsbad, California, about 2 years ago after being arrested for attacking a woman. And then he tried to say that he had fallen asleep at the wheel. You know, it's what's very strange about this death is something that I remember reading about the Chargers and their Super Bowl team back in the 90s. Do you know that he is the eighth person from the Chargers 1994 Super Bowl team to have died? In December, Lou Busch had a heart attack. He was 42. Others who died included running back Rodney Culver and linebackers Dave Griggs and Doug Miller, a defensive tackle Sean Lee, defensive end Chris Mims, and center Curtis Whitley. And the ages of these guys, just shocking. I mean, absolutely shocking. And unfortunately, in this case, as I said, I had a chance to interview him once in my career, and he was funny, very, very funny, personable. And who knew what was going on inside? And he must have really struggled with the whole retirement thing. And he was a beloved guy. He had a foundation, a restaurant that had his name on it, and was definitely well-liked by a lot of people who are having a hard time trying to make sense of what happened. All right, here on America Tonight, I already mentioned that we have that contest coming up in our next show. And as we often do, we kind of zig and zag in a couple of different directions. It's been a strange couple of days heading into the beginning of May. We have some big decisions coming out of Washington with health care and, of course, the Arizona immigration challenge, what happens there. I really think both of those come out at the last second and kind of play out a little bit in the election, since it's down to, for the Republicans, Romney and, of course, Obama. We'll have all kinds of negative ads, but a lot of the conversation, I think, is going to be about health care, depending on what the ruling is, what ultimately the Supreme Court decides. Somebody asked me today what I thought the numbers were going to be, and initially, and I said this when we broadcast from Washington, I really thought that the Supreme Court would vote to chuck out the individual mandate and a big portion of Obamacare. And now I'm not sure. I have talked to several constitutional lawyers, and I don't get a real... I know they're looking at the constitutionality of everything, and I don't get a real good read on it, despite being there and getting reaction. But it affects this election. Because if, in one way, if Obamacare is struck down, then the president can use that to get a leg up, so to speak, when he's out there talking and running and shaking hands and saying that, look what happened, and you would have all gotten health care, and are you struggling with premiums? I mean, he'll twist that around, or his people will twist that around, where it sets him up in a better position, maybe, than if it stays, which sounds so very odd, but I think that's how that would play out. So it's actually a better scenario should it stand, maybe not for all of us, but for the Republican running, or if there's a Libertarian candidate like Ron Paul and Gary Johnson on the undercard for him, that could weigh into their favor too, because of the numbers that they're going to be able to show what will happen if it's allowed to continue, and what happens if we have these healthcare systems where you're pooling money in the states, and how that's all going to work, and fining people for not being insured, which really the challenge probably should have come after that. But when you think about it, you think about people opting out because they can't afford it. They can't afford it, so they have no choice. They're trying to keep a roof over their head or whatever reason. And then they would be forced to do it. Otherwise, they would be penalized by the IRS, which, by the way, all those people are already in place. They feel that confident that it's not going away. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, finally, that trial is going to get underway at Gitmo. What do you think the outcome of that one's going to be? I think it's a layup. I'll tell you my thoughts next.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
And now another CentOS Game Changer with sports broadcaster Aaron Andrews.
I'm down in the main ballroom of a four-star hotel in Austin with Tom, the GM. Tom, you've had four wedding receptions in 3 days. That's a brutal schedule.
Yeah, we've been hustling.
Well, your team still looks fresh, and I gotta say, the carpet does too. Talk about your game plan.
Simple. We called in the all-star team from CentOS, and they changed our ground game completely.
CentOS? They're known for uniforms. How do they tackle your floors?
Their tile and carpet deep cleaning service makes our flooring look like new. With our old playbook, we used to rip out the carpet. So we're running with CentOS from now on.
Thanks, Tom. And thanks to CentOS, there's plenty of life left in this dance floor. Let's go up to the booth.
Tile and carpet cleaning is one of the many expert services the CentOS team can tackle for your business. Don't replace your tile or carpets. Call 1-800-CINTAS6 or visit CentOS.com/radio and tell them to bring in the team.
with the white truck.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
George Washington said, "Government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force, like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." America's government is no longer the servant of the people and the protector of our liberty, but has become that fearful master. We the people must understand the nature of this government gone awry if we are to be successful in saving our country. America is being deliberately destroyed by a cabal of international gangsters so that she can be forced into subjugation to a one-world government. The God-given, unalienable rights of the Declaration of Independence are in jeopardy. We must not let them be stolen by ambitious and evil men. Utopia Silver Supplements believes it is our God-given right to make our own health care decisions however we deem best. If we can help you with your supplement needs and better health, then help us win this health freedom battle. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A silver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338.
I love the Kentucky Derby. I cannot wait. 138th Kentucky Derby, do you believe it, this Saturday. One of my pals, one of the best guys when it comes to really knowing the info, especially with horses, man, he's got it down. And you've talked to him before in the past. We've had him on the air. We've talked to him from Relentless Racing Stables. You can check out his site, relentlessracingstables.com. TK Lawless, he's got this information down pat. Hey, TK, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Huge buildup again. I hope I can live up to it.
Okay, so here's the thing. You know, this was the post position thing, the draw for the post positions. Who do you think really made out when it came to where they're going to come out of the gate?
Well, I think the post position draw probably fell in the lap of Hanson probably better than anyone. They were really wanting to draw kind of outside the other speed horses. And Bodemeister and Trinneberg both drew inside of him, and he drew kind of the outside of them in the 14 hole. Plus, he also drew that 14 is the last post, you know, post position in the original starting gate, and then the auxiliary gate starts with number 15, so he gets a little extra room there also. So probably Hanson got the best post position draw, if over everybody else. Probably Daddy Longlegs, the horse coming over from Europe that ran in Dubai last. He drew the one hole, which everybody feels like is a dead spot. Baffert even talked about a couple of years if he drew the one hole, he might just scratch. So nobody wants to really be in the one hole in that 20-horse field because you just get run, you know, they just come over on you and run over you basically going to the first turn.
Yeah, why 20 horses? Why so? There's always so many horses in the Derby. Is it because, hey, everybody wants to take a flyer? Everybody wants to get in, and if they can qualify?
It's kind of turned into that the last few years, you know, that basically they had to come up with a program for the graded earnings is how they use the cutoff now. So a horse has to make a certain amount of money in graded stakes races, the better races in the country leading up to the Derby. And at that point, the horses with the 20 horses with the highest graded earnings are basically the ones that get in. The last few years, like you say, it's been 20 horse field every time. It's such a spectacle now that everybody wants to go, even if they don't have much shot. I mean, they call it Derby fever and there's no cure for it. Perfect example this year is that horse Trinneberg. You know, he's never been over 7 furlongs in his life. He's a pure speed horse. He's ran some, you know, unbelievable early fractions. Actually, he did it last year at Churchill Downs in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint. You know, he sub 21 opening quarter. And so he's a very, very fast horse, but he's never been further than 7 furlongs in his life. And the guy 3 or 4 weeks ago said he was going to do right by the horse and not run in the Derby because he felt like, if you know, he wasn't up to that, but that he would be a real nice horse in the rest of the races during the year. But here, as it's gotten closer to the Derby, he just, you know, Derby fever just overtook him, and he's going to run. Most people think he's going to run for about 6 or 7 furlongs and stop. And he's really, because he's in the race, it's going to, you know, take some different tactics by a lot of the riders in the race. And it very well may turn out to be like a, like what happened in 2001 with Song and a Prayer, or even 2005 with Spanish Drums, the two fastest paced Derby races. You know, because they went so fast early, anybody within 5 or 10 lengths of them was just spent by the time they turned for home. And horses coming from, you know, basically dead last, closed in one. Monarcos in 01, and, you know, Giacomo at 50-1 in 05. So that could very well happen with Trinidad. There's two schools of thought, kind of, that he'll burn up the other horses close to the pace. Another school of thought is that he may spread eagle the field enough that the field spreads out a little bit more than it normally would chasing him, and that could help the closers work out a little bit better trip if, you know, horses are not bunched up. So to be honest, there's some subjective reasons to look at it both different ways, but he's definitely, you know, his presence in the field has definitely changed the shape of it, for sure.
The, you know, people listening to you and they're getting all this great information, when they go and they actually have a chance to lay a bet, what is your best value? I think there's just so much confusion, and I know we could talk about this for hours, but somebody, let's say somebody who's kind of new to this, what would you tell them to do?
Well, truthfully, you know, my real advice for anybody betting on horse racing is to try to bet a little to win a lot. And really, that's the lure to the parimutuel side of the horse racing business, is that, you know, with trifectas, superfectas, all these exotic wagering that they have now, pick threes, pick fours, even pick fives a lot of places, and pick sixes. I mean, you can bet a small amount of money and have a chance at making a pretty serious score. So my theory has always been to bet a little to win a lot rather than, you know, betting a lot to win a little on a favorite. So, you know, in a race like this especially, I mean, if you happen to be right with a couple of horses and you can key up, you know, some other possible contenders, you know, you can play 2 or 3 horses and mix and match them a little bit and possibly come along, you know, come away with a pretty significant score for a smaller amount of money. So I would say to people, you know, to basically bet a little to try to win a lot. You know, don't necessarily always go with a favorite in a race like this, because the fact that with these 20 horses, these are the best 23-year-olds in the country. Really, this year, there's not a situation where some horse was really getting good at the right time, just didn't have enough earning to get in the race. So pretty much most everybody that's in the race has run, you know, well enough, at least in some prep race along the way, to be a legitimate horse in the race. It's probably as even and as good a bunch of 2-year-olds as coming from last year into this year's 3-year-olds, as we've seen. I think 9 horses out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile from last year at Churchill are in the Derby, which is an unprecedented number. So it's a pretty, you know, solid field and a pretty solid bunch of 3-year-olds this year.
Yeah. And you know, it's a lot of this has to do with, and this is the build-up to the Triple Crown, is about the whole distance thing. And how tough do you think it is? I mean, it's a big day. You know, my uncle, who was a jockey, used to say, you can take all this information, you can crutch it in a whole bunch of different ways, but there's just some days where a horse doesn't want to run, or they get spooked by the big crowds or something that's happened.
A lot of people have the idea that, you know, they watch racing on TV, or they watch it on a simulcast, or, you know, even TVG or HRTV now, but, and they see so much of it that they have this idea that horses are, you know, it's kind of like a car out sitting out in your driveway. Mm-hmm. You go out there and stick a key in and it runs the same every day, and that's just not the case. You know, these horses are more like human beings. They get up on the wrong side of the bed certain days. They get up feeling a little bit tight, you know, here and there on certain days. They're not always 110% at their best on every single day, and you just have to hope on the day that you're betting on them that that's the day they are 110%, because basically they're the, you know, they're the patient that can't talk. So you pretty much have to hope that they, that you end up being on them on the day that they wake up on the right side of the bed, so to speak.
Yeah, I like that. You know what? Every year, what happens is we start to fantasize about the possibility of a triple crown. You've been in this game for a very long time, TK, although you're so youthful and so young. I think you're barely 30. But out of the womb, you started doing this. So here's the thing. Are we, you and I, ever going to see another triple crown winner in our lifetime? It's been so long.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And, you know, they went 25 years before Secretariat. Won the Triple Crown in 73, and then they had three right on top of each other with a, Seattle Slough and a Farm coming pretty close right behind him, and almost another one was spectacular bid. Had he not stepped on a safety pin, he probably would have been a Triple Crown winner, too. So, they had a bunch right in a row, and then since then, since 78, we hadn't had another one. A lot of horses have had a shot at it. There's been two out of three, a lot of different two out of threes of the Triple Crown races, but nobody's been able to sweep them, and it's a little different nowadays. Horses are... It seems over the last 30 years, the breed is a little bit less sound than it was. Their horses are not quite as tough. They don't, the money is so huge nowadays that they don't race as often. They can, the trainers tend to space their races out. Used to the Derby trial the week before the Derby was a big prep race back in the days when Ben Jones was training all those horses for Calumet Farms and winning Triple Crowns. They would run in the Derby trial, and it was actually 4 days before the Derby in those days back in the, 50s and stuff, so, and earlier. But those horses would run in the Derby trial, and that's how it got its name, and then they'd come back 4 days later and run the Kentucky Derby. So you just unheard of anymore. Basically, nobody in a race will have run a race in less than 3 weeks since the Derby. All the big prep races are at least 3 to 4 weeks out from the Derby. It's just, like I say, the money involved in the spacing out of the races and the training techniques they use today are just different than they used to be. So you just don't see the horses don't get the toughening, and coming back on, don't get used to, coming back time after time after time, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks apart, like they used to in the old days. So it's tougher than it was in the older days. I think it's kind of like golf with the Tiger Woods syndrome, there's so many good players nowadays. In golf, it's hard for one guy to dominate, and it's kind of the same way in horse racing. You've got a lot of good trainers around the country in different areas of the country, and they all meet up at Churchill on the first Saturday in May, and the ones left standing go on to the Preakness and then on to the Belmont. But it's a tough thing.
And yeah.
I feel like we probably will see one. I hesitate to say it's going to be this year necessarily, but I think there's a couple of horses capable of that if face smiles on them and they get a good trip in this 20-horse field. I think there's two or three probably that are somewhat capable.
Yeah, I agree with you. How much does the people listening, do you think the jockey plays into this? I like horse racing, so I have a favorite jockey or two. How much does that play into what happens with the horse?
I don't put as much stock in the jockeys as most people do, and especially in a big race like this. I'd say in this 20-horse field, without going down the list right now, I would say at least 15 to 16 of those jockeys are top-notch jockeys that wouldn't hurt the horse at all, no matter what. Now, granted, in the 20-horse field, some guy's going to get blamed for a bad trip, and other guys are going to get praised for a great trip, and that's going to happen. But I think most of the time it's more, the trainer's way more important than the jockey to me, because he's the one that prepares that horse and does. He has basically everything to do with that horse, even picking the jockey as far as that goes. As far as his workout pattern, is how he comes up to that race, other than the Derby, what races have put the horse in. So the trainer has probably way more to do with the horse and his preparation than the jockey. Although a bad jockey can lose a horse a race, and a good jockey can make up length. So.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hey, meat eaters! The freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
And I know you're speaking of me. Fascinating thing. Get beside me. I want you to love me. I'm surprised you never been told before that you're lovely and you're perfect and that somebody wants you.
Anybody out there stunned about what's going on with the Wisconsin Republican governor? You say, what are you talking about? Recall. I'll dive into that in a second here on America Tonight as we twist around that final corner. But before we do that, one quick note. Jared Weaver pitched the second no-hitter in the majors in less than 2 weeks. He just demolished Minnesota 9-0. Was the final score in that one. Ah, the mothership back in Minneapolis. They're probably shedding a few tears for that loss. But it's always a pretty cool thing when you see a no-no. So that crowd was treated to some incredible pitching. And certainly he got hitting behind him, and maybe that made a little bit of a difference. So hats off to Weaver. It is about winning in the end, isn't it? That's why sports and politics have a lot of things in common. I don't think Scott Walker a couple of years ago would have believed that he would be tied in a recall vote, but that's exactly what has happened. It's a statistical tie anyway with his main rival, which is the Milwaukee mayor, Tom Barrett. They just released a poll, and this is 5 weeks before that June recall. So, and this has huge implications nationally, by the way, which is one of the reasons why I'm diving into this. So the Barrett lead, or how tight they are, when you look at Walker setting up a rematch, really. That's what it is. It's really a rematch of labor. It's got huge implications for organized labor, because remember, this was all about, if you think back to a couple of years, people upset, furious with Walker and filling the state house and refusing to leave and all that stuff. So there's massive political divide in Wisconsin, absolutely. 48-47, Walker leading Barrett barely. I mean, it's really a wash statistically. That's why they say that, because it's always 5% undecided and whatnot you could throw into it. But they're doing polling at various polling spots across, and they've seen since January, they've seen this tightest it's ever been. Walker really inflamed Dems and unions representing government workers last year when he pushed through that law that reduced the power of public sector unions. The law forced, remember, workers to pay a portion of the cost of health insurance and pensions. It capped wage increases, and it required most of the unions to be recertified every single year. So that massive protest at the state capitol over and over and over again, and a million signatures to force Walker into that recall. A primary is going to be held June 5th, and Walker is really close to losing this election. If he loses, do you realize he would be only the third U.S. governor removed from office in a recall election? Only the third. And I don't believe he thought he was going to be in this situation. I think he was blindsided. He had no idea that there would be as much reaction as there was, and it led to the fact that he was in the middle of this recall anyway. And a lot of people feel like there's just too much money at the top. There's nothing in the middle, and the bottom is the forgotten child. So the middle class is mostly people that are centered around unions, and they're reacting to Walker. They're reacting to what he put into play. And I'll tell you what, that the state is in a mess, and it's going to be probably even in more of a mess when you get to the beginning of June. And it goes to the heart of the union argument. Unions, are they good or are they bad? Do unions help or do they cause more problems? And do they keep people in jobs that are sucking the life out of the company? And you know what? I don't think there is an across-the-board answer for that, because all the unions are different. I mean, are we talking about the most powerful unions, like the teachers' union, in the really nationally, if you look at the individual unions? Or are we talking about other unions, like newspaper unions or broadcasting unions or other associations? And I think that, you know, the problem is, when you look at you look at the recall, you've got to really look at the recall to understand what it's about. And the people in Wisconsin, with so many of them feeling like they were shoved in the fire, said, yeah, you know what, we're going to do something about this, and we're not going to just take it. We're not going to get shoved off, whether you like some of the demands of our union or not. You know, so did they elect the wrong person? That's what they'll decide. That's what the whole recall thing is about. Whoops, we made a mistake. And when you get enough people to sign, because I mentioned the number, when you get enough people to sign a petition, that's what happens. And they got enough people to sign the petition. And I think he was stunned that there were that many people signing the petition, too. But a lot of areas with unions, well, in fact, nationally, looking at unions, this has a lot of people on edge who are making their livings through unions and feel like the union really protects them, and they don't want to see that get washed away or eroded. And this, what happened with Walker, could set a precedent, and that was part of the reason for the blowback and trying to get them out and whatnot. As I said, my take on unions is a mixed deal. I think some unions are lousy. They're ripe with people who are not doing what they're supposed to do, and they have ridiculous demands that have drained a lot of local communities, a lot of states. But then there are others that are so necessary, and if the union wasn't there, the worker would get just decimated. So there has to be a happy medium, and the answer is there never seems to be a happy medium. Why? Because when you have power, when you have money at the top, that's what happens. I mean, what do you think these top union leaders are getting to be in the positions that they're in? Ask yourself that. And ultimately, in some cases, is the state held hostage because of some of those unions? And does it affect, like, for example, the teachers' unions? How does that affect education in some places like New Jersey or Wisconsin? How does it affect the people there? So I think it's a mixed bag. My answer is I hate to be gray because I don't like to dance around the edges. I like to hit you hard whether you agree with me or not. But I can't say wholeheartedly that I think unions are lousy because some are necessary. But if I were going to lean one way or the other, a lot of the unions and the shenanigans and things I've seen, some of it they brought upon themselves. But others, uh-uh. And Walker didn't expect that when they started to jack with their pensions and the possibility of what the merit raises were and all that stuff. That's when there was the massive recall movement, and here you go. Have fun in that election, because I think it is going to be close. It's very, very, very split. All right, it's also split with this final note here. I haven't even really talked about this very much, but how about the blind dissident that says he wants to leave for the United States rather than stay in China? And there is a deal that's been used to kind of pull him out of the U.S. Embassy in Beijing and defuse a standoff that has really strained the relationship with China and the U.S. The U.S. is trying to clarify his wishes, and China and the U.S. are involved in this tug of war. It's a human rights fight. And it does put us in a very prickly position. So does he ultimately get the pass to come to the United States, or does he have to stay in China? And what should the U.S.'s play ultimately be here? Are we going to burn ourselves by getting involved in this? I say no, because he did what you're supposed to do. He went to the embassy. You got to pay attention to it.
Now, wiggle your antenna.